All right. Thank you for joining us, everyone, today. We have folks calling in right now. Folks are trickling in, but just slowly get us started. This is the Tama Demand Management Working Group meeting number 12. So we are definitely plugging along. I'm Stephanie Hoy with the Consensus Building Institute, facilitating today. And we will do a round of introductions because I always forget to do that. So we'll start here to my right and do a round of introductions, and then we'll go to everyone online.
Justin Jensen, Deputy Director.
Steve Grunewald, grower.
Brendan Flynn, grower.
Hal Crane, Groundwater Commission.
Michael Ward, Groundwater Commission.
Bill Bohrer, grower.
Ian Turnbull, ground competitor.
Todd Hamer, Groundwater Commission.
And Eddie. Eddie, you're muted.
Hi, sorry guys. Eddie Teasdale, Ludo from Scott Menini, consulting engineers supporting GSP implementation for the county.
Awesome. Thanks, Eddie. We'll move forward. Participation procedures, you all know that. The only difference I'll mention today is, in particular, we're using Mr. Al today, so we have to make sure that we're talking to the creepy thing in the middle here to make sure that the sound comes in nice and clearly. So just want to remind folks on that one again. The more that you can just speak one at a time, the more that the folks online will be able to follow the conversation. So let's keep on trying to move on. But we usually, this is why I'm going to be the worst offender about not being able to speak towards the out. We usually do a meeting recap. So last time at meeting 11, we talked, we had an update on the, we had a preview of the framework technical report that ERA, David's Engineering, and LSTE had worked on. And so the outcome from that was the folks identified some clarifications, some other edits, and there will be actually a meeting after this recording. So based on the advisory board, will be a more deeper presentation on that one. But today, Eddie's calling in to give us just a quick update on the technical report. Then we delved into a lot of specifics on the demand management actions, really like looking at the polygon groupings, how they approach that, looking at some spreadsheets. And so a lot of great comments came out of that as folks, since we got several emailed to us, which was really helpful, and it all helped identify some of the like top issues that folks wanted to talk about. So that's actually the main meat of today's meeting. So we're checking on this is just the timeline. Again, we're just trying to get into that, really like getting to the refined, kind of finalize what we're going to kind of recommend here. So we're checking along into the last few phases of this effort. As I mentioned for today's agenda, again, really fast on the technical report update. So that way, because we have like we identified about six top issues to try and cram in today. It's going to go really fast. It only allows like 10 to 15 minutes. So just, I'm going to be trying to keep us chugging along because I know there are a lot of things that folks really want to talk about. But that's the core piece of today. The polygons, calculating safe yield, sustainable yield, the mechanism, the trigger mechanisms, that whole setup for the demand management actions. As information comes in, how does that data, new data, new information get updated to all of this? And then we kind of combined like a nice list of like there are many opportunities for flexibility, learning, adaptive management built into this, but we compiled it also that way we can get a sense for the broader picture of how this is meant to be flexible. And then we'll wrap up with the kind of timeline, milestone reminders, and kind of thinking through particularly what's next. So it's going to be packed full 2 hours. But before I go to Eddie, any questions, any things folks wanted to mention? Checking them on. All right, I'm going to turn it over to Eddie with an update on the framework technical reports.
Yeah, so I mean, really, I think you guys have seen this. I know it was presented. Some concepts were presented in a couple of previous meetings. We've done, I'd say, a more thorough internal review. So we have those comments now. We're kind of incorporating those. The content really hasn't changed. There was no real technical changes after the review. It's really much really just sort of wordsmithing things. The recommendations for sort of next steps in developing that work plan have not changed. And so you should see you will see a revised draft with an August 2025 date here in the next week or two. So that's really a general update on that. And I guess the thought would be that would probably be the draft where we would like, some of your comments on. So Steph, that's really all the only update I have on that. And there will be a meeting, I think the CSAB at 1:30 this afternoon. I'll be kind of providing sort of a summary of that document and propose next steps to that group. So
Thanks,
that's the
Eddie.
general update.
Thanks, Eddie.
Did
Justin, anything you want to add?
I don't appreciate.
But did you address allocation trading and the modifications?
No, it's still in there as a concept, but when you see it again, you'll see that there's some wordsmithing in there, but we haven't like got into the specifics of how it would work. So.
Eddie, this is Michael Ward. One of the things I was hoping to see out of the technical memorandum effort was an estimate of the cost, or more of an impact analysis. I think it's something we talked about earlier. Is this where are we going to see that in the TM?
I don't know what you mean by impact analysis, but there is some cost estimate, more details on the cost estimate in there to implement the work plan.
Michael, do you want to elaborate a little bit of like what kind of information you're hoping would be
We talk
in
about
that?
users, yeah, the stakeholders. Yeah, the impacts on, I guess the stakeholders, but also county level too.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, right now it's still conceptual in there because again, this is just a framework document, but that would obviously be a detail that would be included in the work plan if that's the decision that the direction that the
That's
group
a
wants to
work
go.
plan effort. Okay.
Yeah. So the recommendation is still to develop a work plan where all those details would be sort of fleshed out.
Any other questions for Eddie?
On the work plan, Eddie, and do we have resources available in the grant for that effort?
Yes.
Thanks. And one more is like, well, when is this work plan on? Are you thinking about it in terms of getting it done this calendar year?
Well, so let's talk about that. Yeah, so it's not going to happen this year, but we've had, I mean, Justin, correct me if you don't if I'm misspeaking here. We've had conversations with DWR about getting some components of the grant extended through the end of June 26. So that's probably the time frame for when that work plan would well the work plan would probably be completed maybe this time next year if that's the direction that folks want to go. So we have a bit more time with the grant. It sounds like from DWR for this specific component, not all components, but this specific component.
Thanks. Jeff, would you want to add anything?
Yeah, there's just the discussion, although nothing's concrete yet, was simply that there is some parts of the money that could go past this coming deadline potentially, but they're limited. And so now we need to make sure that we expend the funds that will expire and then potentially get a small extension on certain fund items. But it hasn't happened yet. So we're only saying we're hopeful that that's the case at this point. So there still has to be that contract modification. But they did, in an effort to tell us where that's going to be, right? They did tell us what funds could potentially be extended. They gave us a little list of that. So at least they're working on it and they seem like they're willing to be helpful in that. They were receptive. Receptive, that's a good term. Yeah.
So both Eddie and Justin, is since with this topic about considering using the grant funds for a robust work plan, would that come up a bit more in the CSAB meeting? Since I know it would be kind of almost like on the Cornings timeline.
Correct. I think yes. I think the proposal for the CSAP folks would be again to get because they haven't seen the memo, I don't think. I think Lisa's seen it. They've seen pieces of it, but anyway, the thought is to kind of get that to them in the same time frame, and then get feedback from them on, you know, what direction they want to go specific to the work plan. So once it's final draft, it'll be distributed to you all and the CSAP folks.
Great, thanks. Any other questions for Eddie? All right, perfect. Well, Eddie will stay on the line because there's other technical questions we have, but otherwise we are going to move on to the four program elements and all of those six items that I just mentioned. And so the first one is going to be under looking at the polygons approach. Since would I be able to just totally punt this to you, Justin?
Sure, yeah, you can punch me, absolutely. So essentially, our discussions up until now have been through, you know, a series of different, like, hey, these are the little things that we can do, this is what we can look at. I think it looks as though we are going to move forward with Thiessen polygons as the methodology by which we manage demand. Now, one thing that I want to make a little bit clear as we move forward, this doesn't necessarily mean that we have to call these RMS sites as we move forward. That's something we will talk about during our updates for our annual, I mean, for our 5-year updates for the actual plans. For right now, we're going to call these representative monitoring points by which we work through demand management. That makes sense. We use that as a tool for demand management. Now, we will still, within these polygon sections for those RMP sites, need to create MOs and MTs, right? So they'll have to have an objective and a threshold associated with them.
Say that again.
So we have a total number of RMS sites within our GSP currently. In order to make the Thiessen polygon program functional, we have a new set of wells that are not currently RMS sites within our plan, our GSP. Those are additional management criteria for demand management, and we will have to set MOs and MTs for those wells prior to that 2031 deadline for this to take effect, right? So that's part of the work that we are going to be doing during that period of time, is creating effective MOs and MTs to fit within the trigger-based demand management program.
So that's a new idea.
It isn't new, only just that because if you're going to manage to an objective, you have to have an objective for any one given site. Not every single one. If you look at the map there, not every one of those decent polygons is created around that original RMS site. Some of them we had to add. We found that series of wells, if you remember from, holy smokes, this is a long time ago now, but more than a year ago, that Eddie brought in and presented the data on those wells. We selected the best wells that were possible to expand the monitoring program in that regard, and they have not had MOs and MTs selected yet.
I knew that time that that was just additional data to evaluate the RMPs.
That was to create the polygons, the decent polygons.
No, that, well, maybe the new, are you talking about newer decent polygons or the original decent
The
polygons?
original polygon, the original polygons were not decent within Red Bluff.
Are they still?
They are decent now.
By definition. By
definition.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a mathematical calculation that
Okay.
creates the polygon.
Okay.
Yeah. So currently, we have an expanded number of monitoring points with decent polygon setups. That is the data we are working off right now. The work that is remaining to do that we have 5 years to put in place is setting the MOs and MTs within those monitoring points for the purposes of demand management.
I think the other thing, Justin, is we know that DWR has put in two new wells that will also help refine the polygon distribution. So it kind of piggybacks off what you're saying, that we're going to have to revisit that, you know.
You'll see as we go through this slide, we're going to be expanding monitoring through the life of Sigma, right? New wells are going to go in. The loaders say, hey, we're going to change the get our 5-year programs. Hey, we're going to change this to a monitoring point here because we have good data with the multi-completion well, and now that's going to create a polygon. And that's all just built into the expensive data, right? When you do those things, it will automatically change the piece of polygons and then automatically change the calculations as we move forward.
That's theoretically a good thing.
That is a good thing. Yeah, that flexibility is what we want.
True,
And
truly
also,
robust
yeah,
monitoring as well. It's not just.
the more you have, right, and the better they are, the more amateur the program is and the more reasonable it is. So,
They anticipate probably a better set of polygons as a result.
over time, they'll build and build and build.
Well, like competitive than what you have there.
Will the polygons change and move based off of the improving data or
They do.
changing data?
Yeah. So you'll just re-thesis and calculate them all the time because it's based on distance from site to site,
Okay.
right? So you'll end up creating these a new polygon layer. It's all automatic into the system, and they will then be regrouped based on that new calculations for how much that safe yield total will be in each one of those polygons. So we'll refine it and refine it and refine it over time.
Eddie, can you talk to the concept of the you're working on? What's the model called that you're working on? And is it going to
Yeah.
be this due in 2026? And is it going to be integrated into this decent approach to less arbitrarily pick boundaries on these polygons and more be more representative of actual similarities amongst polygons, I guess, for lack of a better way to describe it?
Yeah, so what we're working on is a Tehama integrated hydrologic model, which is obviously a tool that's much more complex than the polygons. And so the concept could be once that model's finalized, it's probably not going to happen, you know, till maybe this time next year. We can kind of run that model at the same time and kind of compare it to the polygon analysis to see if it, hey, is it aligning? Is it making sense? I can give you a quick example where we just did this down south, where there was a model built, and then we kind of QA QC'd it against this exact same polygon approach, and the values were within about 15% of each other. But I guess kind of going back to your question, Hal, is yes, at some point we would confirm this polygon approach against the model, and you know, to make sure that you know the results are similar, or why are we seeing differences, especially in and around some of the surface water features, because I think you know that model is probably going to be a little more comprehensive. So the answer is yes, we will.
And given that, is this approach then, is this what you recommend on how we move forward?
Yes, but I want to preface it as saying that I think there's a lot of flexibility in this, and I've talked to Justin about this a lot. So it sounds like there's a recognition like this is not perfect. It's going to be dynamic. It's going to change. It's going to be refined as we get better data. So, given sort of the schedule, the January 2026 schedule, then that's kind of my recommendations. And then I just again quantify that this is all going to be run through legal at some point to make sure that it sort of survives the legal laugh test, if you will. So that I would say at this point, given schedule, this is kind of what I recommend.
One final follow-up. When you say it'll go through legal, when will that be?
I don't know, Justin, do you recall?
Immediately after this meeting, I'm sending it over to the legal to review.
Sending what over?
The document.
But it's going to have significant revisions, as my understanding, in the next 2 weeks, right?
It needs to go to legal first.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that. I wish you had, you know, we're not long ago.
Yeah, I can't do that until I couldn't send it to legal until we really kind of say this is the structure we're moving with.
When you say,
Otherwise, we'd be double paying them to review it, right?
so when you say, I mean, the TN, are you talking about the TN? Are you talking
No,
about the
I'm talking about this the demand management program. And so this management program, when you're talking about polygons, not that, not the TN.
Okay.
This demand management program, as it's written, does not specify any certain number of polygons or any certain makeup of those polygons. As polygons change over time within the basins, This is just entirely flexible within that. Then it automatically changes within the program. So, like Eddie was saying, and we had this discussion, as we refine polygons over time and we change how they interact with each other and we change their commonalities, then that automatically just changes within the program. That's why this is written this way, so that it allows us over time to make those changes and then automatically incorporate them into the program. That's that flexibility that we're talking about. Because we all know that this is changing, right? That this every one of the all of the monitoring is changing, all of the data changes over time. You have to have that flexibility built into it, else you're kind of like cornered yourself, right?
So I'm going to suggest, actually, since the legal review, that timeline, also like what might go to legal for review, all those pieces of information are actually going to come up in the next pieces. So I'm going to flag it as something to kind of revisit at the end, so we'll have a better idea of what we're going to possibly share with legal. So I think we'll help out a lot with that. But any kind of questions, kind of things, it was kind of like a reminder of why we went with the season approach. And definitely it was acknowledging the imperfections and the drawbacks, but the group was like, for us to keep on moving forward, it's good enough for now. There's, as Eddie was saying, there's plenty of opportunities to adjust QAQC, et cetera. So if folks don't have additional questions, then we're going to go to the next one, which is all sorts of math. All right. Next one is on calculating safe yields and sustainable yields. I know that there's been a lot of questions about wanting to understand that one. So created a slide that's got math. And so I will look to Justin to walk us through and explain this. Justin, if you need to look at like what's ahead, because
So you can go ahead and bring up one there. Even though I've got my glasses on, this unfortunately.
All right.
Right. So the first part is talking about the volumetric calculation for safe yield on a polygon basis. Remember that safe yield and sustainable yield are not the same thing, right? Safe yield is the calculated model-based output that says we believe this much water can be pumped out of this polygon and not dramatically change groundwater level storage capacity, right? So that math is historical pumping, change in pumping, and total volume. But it has that little model characteristic in there that we like to call, that I like to refer to as the speed at which water moves in a certain area, right? Because you have to put some sort of modifier in there that says water will transition from the outside inputs into the polygon at a specific rate over time. And that is the one thing that is not a measured piece of data. It is a model assumption. So over time, that model assumption will get better, right? And this is what I think Hal is a little bit alluding to with this, how well it represents the actual conditions as they change and move. And that automatically happens as that data gets better. It's built directly into the system. So as when that little delta S changes, which is that model characteristic, then that changes the math for the total safe yield within a polygon. All right, go ahead and go to the second one. All right, so then usage rate. Safe yield for polygon. So this, we're just dividing that safe yield by the total number of irrigated acres within the polygon. Okay, and that gives you safe yield acre feet per acre. And the reason why we're dividing it across the irrigated acres within that polygon is so that it's not punitive for non-irrigated properties, right? And it allows you to automatically adjust for either reduction or increase in irrigated acreage capacity. Does this make some sense? So each one of those polygons in those 5-year cycles will automatically change that yield based on how many irrigated acres there are within that space. So, and then the next thing is sustainable yield. Sustainable yield is calculated in groups. So right now, polygons with the like characteristic of how much water can be pumped out of them, a volumetric consideration, are grouped together. Their average safe yield is taken to create sustainable yield within that grouping. And then that would be the sustainable yield that would be used for that grouping. This changes on every 5-year cycle. So you're using 10-year blocks of data and 5-year cycles to make your modifications. So you don't end up with A, any one oddity or outlier year within the data, making a huge effect on the total. So there's a buffer within that 10-year data period. And the 5-year period allows those of you who use water, right, to know what's going to be for the next 5 years. So you're not trying to change like on a year-over-year basis to meet some model, right? So you have two layers of buffer.
Those polygons that are grouped, they always be continuous.
They will not always be continuous because it can change, the characteristics can change at any time. And so because
So you just it's just based off their characteristics, not their geography.
Not their geography. And you, it happens to be that they're well grouped right now. But as we do things, say for example, we put more water input in one polygon, it increases the total safe yield. That actually might move it into another category. So it has more, it'll be lumped with the other ones that have more pumping capacity. Does that make sense?
Yes.
What doesn't make sense on that is that, again, you're trying to model reality, right? And how can you have a polygon here, a group of polygons here, with not the same characteristics in between? And then just,
Yeah, I can help with that.
that doesn't make any sense.
Well, the reason why it does make sense is because it has to do with how water travels and the speed at which travel water travels.
How's water going to get to here without going through here?
You don't have a well every 50 feet to know which way water travels.
In general,
sometimes it goes this way, sometimes it goes this way. It depends on those situations, and you can't just characterize that as definitely always does one thing. Generally speaking, it moves from the hills on the west towards the river and south, generally speaking. But that's not the reality when you look underground of all of these intermittent clay and permeable layers moving water in different directions from different sources. As you add water or remove water from any given polygon, it affects it in different ways.
But
Right.
in your grouping, you're not really trying to correct what that problem is. It sounds like you're just saying these things are acting the same.
Acting the same.
But so we're going to treat that the same,
Correct.
but we're not really going to try to figure out why they're acting the same.
Well, that'll happen over time, right? As we get more data and we get more understanding of the way it
But
travels
first thing,
down
we're
more
going to treat these west and north polygons as a group, and these west and south polygons as a group, and so on, right? That would be geographic, and you would expect that those have some interconnectivity just based off of what you just described, general movement of water as we might understand it without being able to see underground. Then that would be grouping them by geography, but we're saying. You're saying that the you're going to treat them differently because the information we're getting out of them is how we're going to treat them.
The actual information that we're getting out of them is changing.
So how they're acting, what those polygons are doing, we're just going to put them in group based off of what they're doing, not whether or not they're connected or having connectivity at all.
Yeah, and I think
And so it's all now. So that was my question. Is what would be like what are the parameters by which they're grouped? Is it the
total
total volume
fail-safe
that
volume
you're
that's safe to pump.
load volume. So okay, and that's a calculated number.
That's a calculated number.
And then the things that are applied to the groups would be like fee structures and other things. They would be treated similarly. So
that's right.
Group A gets all of these treatments. Group B gets all these treatments.
Bingo. And here's why this actually works. And the reason why it actually works is we are going to do things over time that increase the volume of water that can be pumped, right? And this is likely to affect the we better be. Yeah, we will be, and I really hope that that's true. And what it does is that that will change the volume, the input calculations into that given polygon. So more water will be able to be extracted out of that polygon because more water is going into that polygon. And that way, it automatically changes it to a like, say, down by the river that has a big input number that is similar to the input number from the artificial recharge or the artificial input, right? And then you end up treating those the same because it's got a bigger input. And it, so it automatically changes based on the water input within that area. And it, over time, as you build more capacity in the areas that need more capacity, it changes them to a better level because they have more capacity to pump. That's why it's set up this way, so that it automatically takes into account those input and puts them with a group that's in a better position to extract water.
So if we go to the point where you're doing something punitive, coercive, and you're saying, okay, you can only pump X over here.
Yep.
And you have no geographic connection between Y over here. That's a stretch for me as far as anything you do over here is going to have an effect on this grouping over here. I'm not getting it. And this whole thing is an approximation because we don't have anything better.
Yep.
Right? That's what's going on under the ground.
But they're independent features. They're independent units.
I know, but you're initiating actions when we get to the point, or if we get to the point of,
yes,
you know, restrictions.
Yes.
You're initiating actions over here. That's not going to affect what's going on over here. Yet you're initiating the same action.
I fall for sure.
And we have a really unique perspective, I think, in Coupe, that we see historically declining groundwater levels in Coupe that, you know, without a whole lot of additional development, I mean, that's pretty well built out in our area with respect to pumping and irrigated acreage. Yet we see declines that the assumption is that it's happening because of extraction upstream of us, up gradient to the west. And so we're going to be saddled with restrictions in an area where we really haven't done anything to increase our usage, but usage west of us has increased. That's one of the problems I see with some of the boundaries of these polygons. You've got polygons that go all the way from Rancho to Hayman to Bend. And you've contended that they're the same, and I would disagree.
I don't contend that they're the same.
Okay.
I contend that they have the same volumetric capacity to pump. And that's a different thing than being the same.
I disagree.
Right? And so here's what I'm going to tell you, and here's why I think this is really important. For your point specifically, right, when you're talking about an area here that is being affected by an area over here, this area is going to get affected first, because it's immediately monitored adjacent to that area. So in order for it to take water from here at that affected rate, that delta S rate that's moving in that direction, it has to itself drop. This one gets the action first to fix the problem, which then positively affects that neighboring adjacent one. And so that's why this is set up this way, so that we can concentrate our efforts on the polygons that need the work to get the water back in them. And when we're talking about something that's punitive, we're talking, there's two structures to this. There's the, we'll call it pay to fix, number one, where your fees are going to go up in an area where we're seeing these issues of falling water, because dropping water levels is the primary mathematics within the safe yield calculation. So as the well goes down, it decreases the safe yield. As you have a falling water level, it decreases the total safe yield. Therefore, as this, what he's talking about happens, your neighboring polygon starts to go like this, right? That is the first one to get that hit, that mathematical hit. And as you fix that problem, it then positively affects the neighbor, hopefully prior to the time frame that it takes to draw that water over based on that delta S transition speed. Does this make some sense?
I know what you're saying. I
And
just don't agree with the notion. We're getting too tricky here.
But there, you
I don't
going to
agree.
have to base it on a thing.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
All right. So if you're going to group them, at least group them to where there's some kind of contiguous as far as physical geography to the groups.
So how do you do it?
People can buy in.
Oh,
You can do what you're saying as far as the sustainable yield for, common sustainable yield, but I've got a major problem with the notion that I know what you're saying, but it's a theory, and
yes.
I'm skeptical as to some of the theories. You
Understood.
need to have
So,
them contiguous so people realize that, hey, this makes some sense that if I'm doing here, something here, it's going to affect the other polygons that are adjacent, not something that's 20 miles
but I
away.
think the I'm may not be following, but if you're saying that if I'm required to do something here and it's not contiguous, it's not going to affect this one over here, but if they're grouped, the thing that's happening here is also being deployed over here as well.
In terms of the punitive.
Then if it's punitive, let's say it's restricted funding. So if the polygons are grouped, even though they're not contiguous, they're both in trouble or bad actors or whatever. So that all of the punitive things happen together. And hopefully they get better together independently of each other, because they're not. Versus, I guess if they're connected geographically, and punitive thing happens to all the things that are all the polygons that are connected geographically, it could be that this one's not in trouble or this one is. Yet they're connected. They're geographically connected, and now you're doing something to this one. And because it's in trouble, and this one isn't even.
I'm not saying that not to group them by sustainable yield. That's not what I'm saying.
Oh.
What I'm saying is sustainable yield and contiguous.
So I don't think you can do that.
Why?
I mean, how you are you saying you just want to draw some arbitrary lines on a
No,
map saying
not arbitrary, no more arbitrary than what we're doing here.
I'm still saying how do you select those?
You can base the selection on like sustainable yield, like you've done, but that group needs to be contiguous.
So you're saying you'll have group A at 2.5 and group B at 2.5 because these groups are continuous, this group is continuous. The actions are going to be the same that need to happen on them, but if we don't group them together, then you're happy with them being independent. So I mean,
I would be more happy with being independent because.
then that seems simple enough that if we do non-continuous ones, we label them as group A and B or Fred and George or however we want to do them, the actions are going to be the
The
same
actions
that
are still the
needs to
same,
happen
but the
after.
results may not be. That's my point.
Well,
That's true. Yeah,
yeah, I
the
actually.
results may not be the same.
That's true. And then they would get disassociated.
I actually disagree with you that that's the best way to do it because of what you just alluded to, and that is that if you want to treat areas that are the bad actors the same, and you want to concentrate your efforts to fix those issues the same, you could very easily have a polygon in a middle of a relatively healthy area that's having a significant issue with falling groundwater levels. And then you would be treating that one geographically the same as its surrounding when it's the one that needed the help and it wouldn't get it. And it would continue to drop.
Follow what you're saying. So we're saying they got in the same group and then they're going to be analyzed or whatever, let's call it analyzed. They're going to be able to do the same things because they're in the same group. This one over here may get better while this one doesn't get better, but then won't this one move to another group?
That moves to the better group.
And then the action ceases.
In 5 years.
Five
Well, I can happen in 5 years.
Correct.
And, but you have to have some amount of time built in.
I get that.
Otherwise, you might
not
argue.
But I'm just saying that, you know,
While I'm getting better and this guy's still bad, I'm still getting treated as the one
you're
who's
getting treated the same. That's my whole point.
That's a different discussion. You know, when, how often do you revisit for triggers?
You're gonna have to have some sort of what would I call it? Compromise there, right? In the sense that you either are going to have rapid changes and a potential for an outlier to get treated like it's surrounding when it shouldn't be, right? Or you're going to have some spatial differences between your polygons based on the map. And so I think we're talking about the trade-off between those two things. And by the way, I don't disagree with you in a sense of people who live out on the west side and farm out on the west side feel like, why is this guy right over here also on the west side getting treated differently than me? And that causes this issue. And but ultimately, we are going to have to pick a methodology by which there is automatic updates based on the conditions. Otherwise, you're taking that flexibility away. A huge area.
I'm not saying don't do that. What I'm
But
saying
you are. It
No, there's two criteria. One is the grouping sustainable yield, and the other is that it's a contiguous group.
Well, that's the basin. Every basin is totally
No,
s from a different basin, right?
no, I
So
don't.
Red Bluff, Corning, Las Molinas, Antelope, they're
When
all
I say grouping,
different.
I'm talking decent polygon.
I think some of this comes back to we just don't like the polygons, period. Because they don't, even though I know you said it's the best thing we can work with, but like I think what Steve is saying is they don't, they might empirically make sense on paper, right? From a data perspective, but from us on the ground as operators, they don't make any sense at all, right? So I think
They're linear and
that's not a good, yeah, exactly. So that drives some of the discontent around how polygons get treated, because when if you're starting with a basic problem and then you treat them the same, even and when but you started from the fact that they shouldn't be treated the same in any way, they shouldn't be drawn that way. So I don't know how you're going to get around that. I don't know from a geography, from a
Well, there be
hydrologic perspective how to draw the
I think
polygon.
maybe it was Hal at the last meeting mentioned perhaps a condition process where you could say, hey, look, this isn't accurate. Inside of the 5 year, I mean, we're saddled with a 5 year update and we see something that needs to be addressed before then. Is there a process by which we're going to be able to do it as growers? Say, look, this isn't accurate. Here's what's actually going on here.
Well, there is a process that's called the Board of Supervisors and the Groundwater Commission.
So you start with polygons because that's the best you have to work with, and then somebody brings forward
And just make some
reasonable data or reasonable argument that says this is a polygon. It's bad. Like we need to redraw it.
Hey, let's do a deep dive into why this is acting this way, right? Bring
Yeah.
us forward the data. Let's look at what this is and let's talk about it.
Right.
And I'm going to keep on that. I think that
So
should happen.
then you would be petitioning the Groundwater Commission.
You would be petitioning the Groundwater Commission always to start
And
in
then
every
the
tender.
Groundwater Commission goes to the flood control, which is the
So it starts in the non-political environment with a recommendation to the political environment.
Yeah. Very good. Where
I mean,
I guess we're at the point where you've stated the polygon perspective, the polygon approach is imperfect, but it's the best we have to work with within the
because you can't
line.
yeah you can't you
And so,
cannot have a methodology to geographically isolate based on those sorts of life functions of because I don't know the layers underneath.
That's a big hurdle to overcome for most.
It's almost impossible to do though.
I mean, most of us have a pretty good idea where it's running.
And that's already been
but, one was
even though they may not be RMS wells, but we all have an idea of where our groundwater is. And if we see recovering groundwater in our own space and are still being told we need to decrease pumping, then that's kind of, to me, that doesn't fly right.
I know the only way to solve it is to get a good array of equally spaced RMS wells.
Yeah, but that's not going to happen.
It's probably enough.
It's
because before you get punitively damaged.
Right. The legislation has said you have to do this by a date, and it didn't care about whether or not you had RMS wells. Then what some children fixed, whatever you give you the data.
I'm just going to say this. What we do know is there are places where we have significant impact to groundwater levels for sure. It's not like a debate, it is happening.
I agree on that.
We know that it is likely that those wells interact with each other and water travels throughout the basins and from other basins and to other basins. We know that it what is underground and our knowledge of what is underground is imperfect, right? We have ideas about what things are going to happen, but it is always imperfect. And so ultimately, we have to put something together that allows, as our data and input changes, to automatically change to compensate for that. And ultimately, that's my goal here, is to make that so, hey, we just figured out that this doesn't have this rate anymore. It changes the math automatically. We don't even have to do anything. It doesn't go to a board. It doesn't go to a panel. It just changes in the program.
That's a good goal, is to have the maximum amount of flexibility in the program as possible with local control.
I'm with you. Yeah. That, I mean, that's what I heard from you guys, right?
Yeah.
We've been talking about this all the time. It's like, hey, look, we don't want this crazy rigidity. We want it to be more finite.
We don't want to get to a one size fits all fix to the thing you just described.
Yeah, that's why this needs to be a general outline.
Correct.
Only
right.
Without the specifics that is affords the time to try to remedy the concerns, make it more accurate.
But
not
it does
for now.
When you
said
the time,
when you said this, what are you pointing at?
Just the
demand management plan,
the straw proposal you're talking about.
That was the case I was making earlier, more of an outline, because there's so many of these points like what you're bringing up. Not to get too far down the weeds on specific details on anything, just conceptual.
Is it true, though, that it has to meet like the minimum thresholds desired by the state, which the legislation, in order for it to be accepted, or they're going to come in and take a wish?
They don't give you an outline. You're guessing at what that is.
Right.
So why is
they get it backward?
Yeah, that's why I say you can't be shy about kicking it back. Which I think requires
many, many meetings ago. We said let's start as broad as possible.
That's right. I think you brought that up, and it's not a failure. They come back and say specific things they want more details on. To be overzealous on the front side is literally going to do nothing but bankrupt people and lots of lawsuits.
It boxes us in.
Yeah, and
my
lawsuits.
My response to that is you should do what you told the state you're going to do. And if you float something that does not have any amount of factual demand management within the program, it is my opinion that that response is going to be highly negative. And also, the political parties currently in office have very openly stated, you guys need to do this.
The legislation says it.
Because the legislation says it, and because they say it. So it is my recommendation to you that we build a very flexible system that automatically puts it in. And by the way, there's nothing punitive in 5 years. We get 5 years in this program to say, this looks like it's working, this looks like it doesn't, and you can get to see the data during that entire 5-year period.
we don't want to box ourselves in during the first 5 years of voters.
You're not. There is no loss.
I'm not sure that it's not more than 5 years.
Yeah.
What's the
that's true.
What's the implementation date of? It's not a finish line, but the inception on the Sigma process where there's required sample
2040
to keep that in mind.
Yeah, and this that's part of the reason why you put those delays out to 31, giving you that 10-year buffer to get to where you're evened out and you're on that sustainable flat track. I know up and down happens. I mean, on average, right? This sort of average flat track, which they define as sustainability.
I guess we'll get into your timeline farther back in this presentation.
Yeah.
That's why, what's in 2031? What takes place in 2031 according to what you're proposing?
The action one and two become a reality.
Which are the fees?
Which are the fees.
So I'm saying, I'm guessing that has to be farther back.
So
that's what you don't know what it looks like yet. Just going to be lost.
So the parts that I'm tracking is that overarchingly, it sounds like this group is wanting to have some sort of appeal process, some way of saying, hey, there are these outliers, and get a better understanding of what's the data and evidence to warrant doing something differently. I'm hearing, you know, there's the flexibility and simplicity as much as possible, and then build in the complexity as you go. There's a timeline questions that we'll revisit. And I think that that's good, good enough for now, but want to just keep us moving along because some of the points that were raised are items that are going to get tackled in. We're talking about trigger mechanisms right after this. So.
Yeah, let's trigger mechanisms.
Before we do that, I'm still more confused since we need more to bulletize what the issues were that we just discussed. I mean, I guess the broad things, the step things.
The issue, as I hear it, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that if you pass a program right now that has demand management in it, then you might get new data in the future that changes that in some way. And then you're beholden to something that is on paper now. And that is the thing that I want to clarify with you. This is that stuff, as data changes, that's automated in the system. And you'll see that here in that flexibility bit in a minute. Yeah.
There, what was the issue with this joining polygons, not joining polygons?
So that is that you could have five polygons in a circle with one polygon in the middle. These five be treated the same and this one different, right? Because of the calculation based on its total save yield, right? Because you're grouping polygons based on that. But because the primary math in that is that groundwater level, it is true that this one is having more of a problem than these ones. And this one needs more action to work it. And the fixes, which management action number one will call the fix, is pays for that can happen. That's its goal. The work that needs to happen within that area of creating more ground, more water to go in, or potentially more investigation to see what that problem is, or potentially a recommendation on the restriction on how much property total can be developed within that area. All of those things are mechanisms and triggers, right? And it doesn't even tell you in this one which one it has to be. It's just saying, when you reduce this water level in this particular polygon, or this these polygons with light characteristics, which the map is about falling groundwater level, that you have to increase what it costs to fix the problem. And that's what Management Action 1 is about. Does that make some sense? So it costs more to fix a problem. The people that are within the polygons that have those falling groundwater levels are the ones that are going to be responsible for the cost of fixing that problem because it affects them directly within that polygon.
And just, sorry, I mean, this, I do get confused about all this. So then you're managing on a polygon basis.
You are not. It is still grouped together with all the ones that have similar characteristics, like these falling water levels, et cetera, et cetera.
But that seems to be the argument that Ian wants, is that it's not grouped with them. It's a, it would stand alone. And the actions would be the same, but you can't, it, what would change would be the last calculation, the sustainable yield, is that you wouldn't have the advantage of all of the other acreage of this. Of the polygon.
It makes the math best out of
it. Yeah.
So
that polygon.
So that one, if you do it on a polygon by polygon basis, one bad situation in one given year in one polygon would have a drastic effect on what happens to that polygon. There needs to be some buffer space.
And,
right? Where you where you're saying, hey, we're averaging this across several polygons that are all kind of doing the same thing right now. And this allows that to buffer across.
Because so that that's a bonus.
I assure you,
I have a hard time believing, given your, you know, layout, got a ring, you got one in the center. I've got a hard time believing that what's going on in the ring doesn't affect the one in the center.
They all affect each other.
Yeah,
every right. polygon.
That's right.
Every polygon. The every basin affects another basin. Right. The foothills affects the basin. The river affects the basin.
Yes,
we know these are all true, right? These are this concept basically like radical. Yes, we do know that. And there is math in there for how fast they affect each other. That's that delta S. So that exists too. That's within that calculation.
Yes. It's still a gross approximation that is that we really don't know.
And it's
and
yep.
I have a hard time believing that you can get into a situation where you get a polygon over here, multiple polygons, and multiple polygons over here, and you've got other polygons with a different sustainable yield in between, and yet you're tying these together in a way that, let's say, whatever happens over here, these folks are on the mend. And these folks are not, all right? They need to be a separate entity so that what their actions are tied to their physical location.
But you will be, the one that's on the amend will change automatically on that five-year cycle. That's the beauty of it. They will get lumped in with the other ones that are now more healthy. I mean, we're not gonna fix that problem in 1 year. And you're not going to be on the mend in 1 year, right? Groundwater levels go slowly.
I'm not talking about. I understand just how it works.
So I know you. So you, it's automated. What you're like saying, what you want to have happen, happens automatically.
But this is how I see your scenario is that I left it. Even though I have a safe field here, 2.5, I have a safe here, 2.5 here. I'm assuming that in my middle ground is better off. So I have a safe yield of 3 as an example. If I have improving groundwater elevations here, I'm going to be actually treating this differently than I'm going to be treating this 2.5 zone over here. If I am hearing you see
only so, after 5 years.
What will happen in 5 years?
Well, let me again. All right. This is a scenario. So my well, I'm losing 3 feet a year on average. May have a good year this year. But my well is in this 2.5. I'm in a polygon right on Thomas Green. I'm in a polygon 2.5.
Okay.
I'm in regional zone 2.5. And it's most of the red blood circulates.
Yeah, big med center second over here.
For your criteria, when my well reaches so far, as I understand, things are evolving here. If you get that, when I see my MT, which is probably going to be in a couple of years, worst case, everyone in that 2.5 zone is impacted.
If they are still in that 2.5 zone,
they're going to be in the 2.5 zone.
Well, you don't know that.
I'm pretty sure.
I think you're mistaken. Or to be honest with you, I don't think they will be.
Oh, I'm on
2.5 zone.
Okay.
I disagree with you on that.
All right. But still, let's say I've got most of the rebels sub-base, and
let's say it is, yeah.
It's in 2.5. Well, my well just threw everything. Yeah.
But it's your well doesn't throw everything because it's multiple wells that have to go in and make the action happen.
The way your thing reads is that if one well exceeded an empty in your straw.
Is that where you're talking about the domestic or 50%?
You're talking about action number two?
Yeah.
It's 50% of the wells.
Okay. Yeah, I missed that. I'm sorry.
But yeah, right. It's never one well.
Yeah,
we don't do anything on a one well number because then you can have an outlier creating a passive effect that you don't want to have happen. You have to buffer this stuff across a number of wells.
I totally get it.
And the reason why we use a number like 50% is the areas can be big and small, and they'll change in these 5-year periods. And you want to have something that's consistent that says half of them are going to do this. So it doesn't matter how many are in it. Half.
Thank you for that. So getting back to Ian's question here, though, if I have a 2.5, if I'm treating 2.5 zones the equally, mm-hmm. can I have a beneficial zone here? I mean, it's the beginning to make sense to me. I appreciate this conversation.
Yeah.
So
it's important.
It's
it's tough, I know. And by the way, I'm not trying to just think how I understand what you're saying. I'm not like
we're discussing.
Yes, yeah. I'm not taking offense in any way if I sound
offensive. If you've got, say, Ukraine, you know, let's say different, we'll look at rates of change or rates of decline. Even though I have a 2.5 here and I have an experienced rate of decline of 1 foot, you know, per year, versus I've got a rate of decline of a year or two.
Right. Rate of decline is the primary mathematic. The water level is the primary math in determining what your safe yield is. And so they have similar declining water levels.
Okay.
If they're within the same safe yield zone. That is just what it is. And by the way, I get your point too, where you say, hey, and Steve's, where you say, hey, this whole area is covered by one well, and I think this is very different than this and those in the middle. And by the way, I get it.
That's undeniable.
It is so true. However, it's what we need to do. Our job is to get the correct monitoring over time in those places to decrease those polygons so that this does act differently. Right? That's
so
our job.
So part of the flexibility that we keep talking about is the ability to refine the number and size of polygons based on
yeah.
what we're seeing within
exactly.
Sub areas of each market.
And by the way, if you think that you're, say for example, you have a block, right, that is acting really differently than your neighbor's block. Let's just talk about this from this perspective. And you say, hey, look, I don't know what the hell the deal is, but my right here, this looks way different than what's happening just right over there. Will you make my well an RMP? And then it's going to center a polygon around you. And it will take into account the difference in your between you and where your neighbor is.
As long as your well is
represented,
it's is a good well.
Of course, the more problem. And by the way,
history that you can
yeah, you're going to have it's going to take 5 years to get the history for sure.
I don't want to go down that road.
If we really think that we're talking about something that's so massively different that it's a problem,
that's another whole
that's our issue. Entirely.
Say that somebody says, well, if I have a dry well, so everybody has to pay.
No, I don't mean that.
I think that intro into saying, making somebody, allowing somebody to ask for their well to be the RFP.
But we decided by a group, not by an individual. Yes. Anybody can come forward and say, hey, I would like my well to be monitored if we determine what is an RMP.
All right, let's go to Michael, and then I'm going to push us forward to the next one because we were already talking about calculations.
Yeah. Would you, I'm here, manage action number two, would you go over the second paragraph?
Hey, I love that. Thank you for that. Let's go to mechanisms. So do you mind if we go over the, because this is our
minute. I'm willing to read this paragraph. Just from
what do you want?
We're too shocked. Imagine action number two, second paragraph. And I just want to make sure what
this is the 2-year period comment.
Yeah, what am I not getting here?
Yeah, so if you have more than 1 year in a row of an RMD below the MT, then that is that that individualized effect. You are correct about that.
Okay.
But that's you're talking about, that's a severe decline issue.
I don't see that. I have no doubt I'm going to see that.
You may. I will debate you on that. I do not know. Right?
I watch it every month.
I don't understand. Are you watching your RMP?
Yeah, okay.
And you think that it's going to be below it? I don't.
Well, I don't exceed my MT, but I may recover. Let's look at the chronic Sunday.
There has never been a single RMP in the entire county that has been 2 years below the MT.
Not yet.
Not one.
Hold on. Not yet, but in our annual report, we had 11 wells.
That dipped in the dry season.
Yeah, that's within 1 year. So I'm waiting for, okay, Jimmy, there's a set of wells there that could be meet this criteria, is all I'm saying. I'm not saying it's happening now.
Everything has a possibility, right? And if we want to dumb that down and say that even that is 50% or something of that nature, fine, I don't care. It's only there for that really extreme scenario that, I mean, if that is the case, then we're going to have a big basin-wide problem that's so obvious.
Yeah, no, I get that. I guess the thing is, where I look at mines, that's where some of the poly, and I haven't brought this issue up, I mean, as far as your polygons, and that I'm right on the basin boundary.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And to me, it's like, no, I need a polygon that incorporates both sides of this Thomas Creek for it to make sense and just work intelligibly. You know, so I'm so on the edge, not only the polygon, but the extreme edge of the Red West subbase as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think my well should impact, my ENT issues should impact the rest of the Red West subbase that falls with the State Bill 2.5.
Over time, as your well falls, it will likely come out of the safe yield 2.5, and it will become a lower safe yield polygon because of that math. If these ones are not falling and this one is, they will become different automatically.
Is that the thesis of Jess?
That entire thesis will then become a different.
That's But when do the piece of the test?
When we decide they do it. So when you create another RMP, it's not open and change. Every time we create an RMP.
So the data point, the senior
year. And it's automatic, right? We don't do anything.
So
it's an RMP, it's automatic.
When will the decent adjust every 5 years?
When there will be reviewed every 5 years, that's right. Yeah, and if we have based on enough data, we can all agree and say, we can sit in a room and say, this one has long enough data now. You know, let's set an NLMP and make it an RMP.
So more RMPs or more RMS?
Yeah, so the reason why...
Then the thesis will adjust.
Just so you know, the reason why I identify our beavers as RMS is right now, they're not necessarily in our plan. As a representative monitoring, whoever been representative monitoring site versus point, representative monitoring point, monitoring site. RMP for this is associated with demand management only until we necessarily put it into a plan, a GSP. But that requires a GSP revision, which is a big, as you might imagine.
And those an RMP or an RMS can be any well,
could be any well,
not necessarily a. Dedicated monitoring well.
That's right. In fact, quite a few of them currently are, say, an agricultural well that's existing in.
So, for the record, that's why I was making the case that the comment you make, the potential restrictions take effect in 2031. For the points that he brought out and those adjustments, is why.
That's automatic. The problem that he says would not be a problem.
About the improvement. The improvement of the data, the which will allow the polygons to be further refined as there's more data available.
Yeah, so we added a whole bunch of... Yeah, I understand what you're saying. And
it's pretty reasonable.
RMS and RMP, we already increased those numbers now and should have data in the 2031 to create that new RMS and RMP system, which will be very helpful. We've increased the total number of multi-completion wells we have basin-wide due to grant funding, and that will be helping us provide that attack.
Multi-completion well, which completions are you paying attention to?
That's going to be how we set the MOs and MDs based on which completion it is, and we're going to have to decide that.
For each one.
How many, you have an idea how many multi-completion wells are funded between now and 31?
Eddie, how many total did you have in the grant? Total multi-completions? New?
I think we had 8 total, 5 in Corning, 3 in Antelope.
And then we have 1, 2, 3, 4, we have 6 through DWR directly.
Correct.
Grant
shower.
Both.
Yeah. And so that's a fairly big expansion. We just put a new one in out of Rancho Nehema. Obviously, we all know that's Pop's bed spot, so that got a new one. We just put a new one out on Dye Creek Preserve that was funded by the state, that's independent of our grant process. And those continue to get installed over time. They've got a new one, then the next, then one, then the next.
Is it accurate to say that those multi-completions are sort of gold standard for an RFP?
Yeah, but I would agree that that's true. It gives you a really good idea of what's happening later.
Better than a 60-year-old ag well.
Yeah, but the 60-year-old ag well still tells you the water emission. It's not an inaccurate water emission.
Well,
the only difference
cell it starts to generate because it's 60 years old.
The only differentiation is that you in a multi completion you get to see the difference between layers, right? In a well that you're talking about, you only get to see the difference within whatever layers that thing screened at.
Correct.
Yeah, and that is the difference.
And if those screens are already proper.
All right, so that was just long. We're running behind. I'm still tracking the fact that there's a question about non-contiguous polygons. There was a question about if the upstream area is the one that's pumping and then punishing the one that that's downstream seems unfair. There's the I might have a well that's going to hit its hit its thresholds in the relative near future. And so just these are these various outliers and scenarios that folks are just wanting to better understand how does that fit within the proposed demand management program. So I think, we're going to talk about timelines, we're going to talk about flexibility and how all this packs in. So these things will address as we go along. But I want to make sure that we're conceptually understanding what's being proposed.
All right, so now we're
going to
talk
about
number 2.
Do I make a statement?
You can.
Since my good friend sitting next to me can make up his own problem, I'm going to bring my problem. As we discussed last meeting, our logging well that has to be on same age facilities. It's on the west side of the polygon, and the polygon has vast differences in water well characteristics on one side of the other. If this management has to be, would have been in effect in
2022. Yeah,
21 and 23.
Even you wouldn't know. You would have no idea.
You get to be close to 100 feet. So. If it had been in effect in 2022, I think monitoring well was probably sure enough. An MT that was bad. I'm not sure it would. Understand that, but anyway, we've been studying to 20% or 40% restriction, not only in the four wells that are on the west side of the canal, but the six wells between there and river. For how long?
For 5 years.
Right? For 5 years.
Well, that's actually not true.
We've decimated the orchards.
There is an automatic recovery built in. So if you do recover, then it automatically takes the BOA. The 5 years is just to put implement things, not for you then.
The drought lasted 2 years, so I'm 23 to recover. So that is when this is going to make effect. Right?
I'm going to tell you, first of all, you never would have received the actual restriction that says you cannot pump more than the sustainable yield. You never reached that.
Is that because it's a rolling average?
Yeah.
So that outlier of 21, 22 when it dropped below would fall off.
It bumped into the map.
It came in. So the first year it came in, it was looking at the other 4 years prior to it, right? And then it moves through the 5 year rolling average.
There's a 10 year rolling average and a 5 year update.
Okay.
But that isn't what this language says here.
It does. It says there's a 10 year rolling average and a 5 year update.
So you're saying that would not have reached the minimum threshold because of the rolling average.
Yeah. So we have given you the definition of safe yield, which will be in the definitions at the front of this document, like I promised Ian we would do, we'll give you every definition. And that has that 10-year safe yield description in it, that 10-year bus average bit that we've already presented both here and in some of the public meetings about how you get to safe yield. And he's done that presentation. That's on a 10-year average that's rolling. And that is because that's a response to your EWR's requirement to shorten it, because we used to have a client.
So with a 3-year drought likely to have significant impacts going to create these demand management.
Yeah, it laid it way down there over 3 years, right? And it gets way, way low, then it's gonna start buffering that map pretty heavily.
I'm hearing Bill say you guys have been sort of not seeing that in here. Can you show us?
It's not written right here. It's within the definition of safe yield. The map of safe yield, which will be in the definition sheet in the front of this.
Okay. You remember Eddie's presentation on safe yield?
Part of the problem, Justin, when you come in here and we've got all the information. And I get it, time is running.
Yeah.
And it's hard to keep up with it. But, you know, the materials need to be presented as they are going to be if we're going to provide valuable comment.
You are providing valuable comment. Yeah. I mean, there is no question that's true. That's what we're doing.
One of the things that I said, this is pretty upsetting. I mean,
it's fun.
You know, there's a lot of issues we're talking about. We have a lot of concerns over several different areas. Can we save some time for us in Maine to actually come up with recommendations and be thinking about it along for the rest of this Maine thing? What do we want to see happen here? Or what do we think needs to be considered? Does that make sense?
So that's going to be our 27th meeting.
So
that's why we're doing this, so that you guys all get to the 27th to say, hey, here's my problem and here's my recommendation.
But the more that we have that initial brainstorming and better understanding, like what are the concerns, the more that discussion and the ad hoc, like whatever meetings need to occur. Again, we'll revisit the timeline, but exactly, yes, that's a very important conversation.
Yeah, that's what we're having that 27th meeting for. So we're leaving here with the expectation that everybody's going to say, this was my problem that we talked about. After hearing all of the explanations and discussing it and brainstorming, here's what I would like to see. And then we're going to come together and talk about this again.
All right. So pausing on everything, let's go and make sure to do an overview of the demand management actions. So, demand management action one. Justin, do you want to give an overview?
Yeah. So demand management, action one is what we're calling like the pay to fix approach, right? If you're in an area that is having significant problems, then you would, as a drinking water user, would have more responsibility to fix those problems than an area that doesn't have those issues. And what that is saying is for all use categories. So we are setting up fees based on assumptive volumetric use, unless you report it. right? You always have the option to give you a factual use, but assumptive volumetric use based on acreage and productive criteria, right? And there will be a maximum number there in that assumption, the highest category. That highest category is those who have irrigated property that we have no idea what they do with, because they didn't report what they do with their property to us, but we know it's irrigated because we have satellite data that tells us that. And number two is certain very specific high water yield crops, which I don't think there's many left of that in Dana County, like surface water, I mean, like flood irrigated alfalfa, which has super big numbers, right?
Right.
So with those kind of categories are going to be this maximum assumed use category. The effect of trigger one is going to charge fees based on a reduction from that maximum use category. Okay? If we get to a point where we hit step one, 20% below MO, of the spring to fall range is below the MO, 10% is taken away from the max assumed pump rate. So on 10% of the water, if you are pumping over that number, so I'm going to show you that math here on the next page, you're going to get a fee on that 10%, just on the 10%.
You're saying two different things that I'm following. You're talking about fees, and you're also talking about use reduction, or you're only talking about fees?
This category right here is paying to fix the problem, not specifically use reduction.
Okay, so so 20% was step one, 20% below MO, you get negative 10% on assumed max pump rate. So that does mean you're there's a
no mandatory reduction in use.
It does not
about that.
Where how does that affect, or how does that calculate the money?
I'll show you that in a little bit. I'll show you that in just a little bit.
This example on the right, it's talking about acre.
Yeah, we'll go to the next slide maybe to see that in a little bit. So if you go to the next slide, actually, go for it. You can go there right now. You can see how the math works. So if, for example, the maximum assumed use is 5 gigabit, right? There's a maximum assumed level. It's a 10% reduction, so 4.5 acre feet would then be the fee limitation. So if you use 5,
I'd say a fee on
5.5.
No, there's not the amount of volume. How
so that way it incentivizes two things. A, reporting for what you actually use so that we get a better idea of what everybody's using, which is important for our water calculations. And B, reduction.
So I can either voluntarily reduce my use,
yeah,
or I can voluntarily pay the fee.
That's it.
Which that fee is used to do management actions that
might increase water supply into the polygon.
Or not just or
we all know that.
Or
I know
where just the bankrupt would be boring, or at least as they like to sell.
At a certain point, that will probably be the case, right? If we get to the point where you're way down here, and we just continue to have these problems year after year after year.
Your choice, I get it. What you're saying is correct. I mean, because you either pay a fee so you keep your yield and your take care of your tree, you keep your yield low, or you have profitability, or you reduce your application of water and therefore you reduce your profitability. So either way, your bank account is being affected as a growth.
Good.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That is correct. There is attribute.
And this is an end run around to prove that you use less water than you're forcing the meter installation voluntarily, quote unquote.
Well, it's partially that. Yeah. I mean, just openly stated, it benefits everybody if we know how much water everybody is using correctly.
So you're saying if the table says prunes use 3.5 acre feet. That's the MO, correct?
That's the assumed.
That's the assumed. Sorry,
assumed value.
And the only way for me to tell you that I'm using 2.8 is for me to have a meter.
That's right. And report that to me.
And then I might not get triggered.
And then you might not get triggered. And by the way, these triggers are crazy conservative, right? If you have these really high numbers, it's going to take you many steps until you get triggered anyway. Because it's going to go to 4.5, then 4, then 3.7. And you know what I mean? As you go down these realms, theoretically, everything is always theoretically when you haven't done the error.
So give me again, 20% below MO means what?
20% below MO means 10% on assumed max pump rating. Yeah. So 10% off 5. So that goes to 4.5. Everything above 4.5
is charged off.
No.
20%
below MO.
It's going
to
That's what we're telling you. That's what we're looking for is how is that 20% defined? So if you could run through that, you can
put it. Yeah. So, do we have a hydrographic there?
I can bring up one.
It's just right there. I can draw it when you can look at the hydrographic folder.
That's so many hydrographs.
Yeah.
That would be straight and
yeah. Yeah, that's amazing.
Threshold as
well. Oh, by the way, we've got MOs we got to work on, and that is something
well, that's where I was headed.
Yeah, it's always paused, but vastly speaking, the MOs are pretty good. There's a few that we have some problems with.
And but what would we tell anything to the minimum threshold?
Because DWR told us you cannot do that. Flat out in their response said, do not tie anything to your minimum threshold because that's planning for failure. You won't you tie things to your MO.
Then, I mean, it's integral that the MO has to be revisited because not much time was spent on it in the development before we agree to
I think
what these penalties are.
Well, let me just tell you, I mean, just look at where this MO is. I mean, come on. Are we serious? This MO is way the hell down there, right? Look at where we are, generally speaking.
Nobody wants to look at they're all over the place. They're all over the place.
And there are some that we got to talk about. I do not disagree with you, and that's why we have some of this time to grade the MOs in the way that we need to. It is going to happen over time. We actually have some more MOs to set, right? On those other polygon wells, we have more MOs to set.
How often and when do you address the MOs?
5-year cycles. That's within that 5-year.
Is that local control or subject to approval of the state?
No matter what, everything's subject to the approval of the state. That's how we live, right?
So the MO of the DWR number?
No, it is our number.
Oh,
we selected it.
God bless you.
And they approved it or did not approve it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, there wasn't a lot of thought put into the MOs because everybody said at the time, oh, they don't matter. You can exceed them or not exceed them. It doesn't matter.
I'm going to say this out loud.
It is there.
Yeah.
Everybody said we don't need to worry about it.
Don't worry about it.
Well, it turns out we do need to worry about it.
Yes, we do need to worry about it.
Yeah.
And that has changed. That methodology has changed based on reviews from the state level. And now we need to go back and talk about MOs again. But we have 5 years to do it, and we are going to do it. And everybody's going to sit in the room and reset the MOs because it has to happen. And we need to set MOs for those ones that don't have them.
So I don't want to wait 5 years.
We're going to start now. We have 5 years to make it happen.
And then with the rig plan, it gives us the opportunity to fix that.
Yeah, we can do all those things. Yes, absolutely.
That's going to time.
So let's just.
Should the MOs be done at the GSP renewal 5 year?
They should.
Actually coming up in
2027. Yeah, that would require a plan revision in 2027. I find that unlikely. I think we're going to do it in the 31 when this take the same time this takes effect. The 31 and the 31, they overlap each other. That works out very well. So let's just talk about the way this works. So let's just say this is your average spring to fall. That number is a calculation based on the duration all the time. But let's just say this is your average spring to fall. If 20% of that average is below your MO, that triggers one.
Repeat that.
If this is what we're going to call this the duration, spring to fall is the duration, right?
Any year.
This dot to this dot, average over the 10-year rolling.
Oh.
Everything, we're doing everything in a 10-year rolling average, right? So that's the duration. 20% of that needs to be below this green line, trigger one.
On a 10-year rolling average.
I mean, I know you guys can visualize, you can see what I'm talking about, right?
So 10
this is not punitive. I'm telling you, it is not.
10 of those highs and lows on average, that's 20% below the.
That's right.
The green line.
But if all 20% below, no, that the duration is created on a 5-year rolling average.
Five.
The trigger, I mean, on a 10-year rolling average, the trigger is it being 50% of them being below the 20% ratio in any period.
So
you're having 50% of all the group wells being 20% below during a period of time.
Any year?
It's actually, I think I wrote it as two.
2 years.
It's over 2 years.
2 years.
What is the 10-year average? 2 years.
So the 1 drop of the spike hit, right?
Yeah. Where's the 10-year average in funny?
Safe yield calculation.
Well, if that's the trigger. Then I don't understand how much 10-year funny.
Because it's the average duration. Can you bring that back up?
Maybe.
Average duration. If you just pick 1 year, it could be that year.
Right.
Right, and that's weird. Or if you just pick 1 year, it could be this year. It's average. We do all of our calculations now on rolling 10-year averages. So the duration is a 10-year average duration from the past 10 years.
So if you went, some dry years, is what you're, 1 year your well went down 5 foot during the season. Next year we're down 15. Okay, over the average of 10 years of how far that pounds up and down, you'll come up with maybe an average 10 foot. Okay, so 20% on any given year would be 2 foot of that would have to be below the MO. Okay, so it doesn't matter how much it particularly dropped in this year. It's that average that. Over the 10 years, that's where that 20% comes from. Am I right, Justin, or not?
That's where that comes in, and you are right. Yes.
So,
and so when we're talking about the way this is set up right now, it is massively conservative. I mean, it is.
It's filling in like a
huge amount of room there. Huge amounts of room in almost every one of these. What's that?
Why are they allowing it? How long would it take to fix it?
Well, I have no comment about that, and we're not going to say anything there.
We want it. All right.
And
we want it.
All right. So many conversations. Let's get a talk.
And so, as we, you know, that average doesn't affect you if your water is way up above it. But as you get down here, 3 or 4 drought years, and your spring returns are starting lower and lower, then that average and that 20% is really going to start to kick in, because that's when you'll get below the MO. Okay, Bill, it doesn't work on yours because yours has been below it every year for
your MO. But
that's where that.
The MO in your well needs to be fixed. When we met, we talked about that.
I know that.
Yeah, you have one that needs to be fixed. You have one of those very few, though. There's not that many of them. But yours is jacked.
It's affecting what the trigger deal, and there still isn't the triggers. You'll say, and it's about a 10-year average. That's the first time I've ever heard of something.
Okay, so we'll include that. They'll better explain like how the 10-year average is
in
really
all
exists.
Of the definitions.
So we'll
in all of the definitions, it will say it right up front on the document. It'll say the old calculations this way.
So,
trigger percentages calculating this way. It'll just be a list.
So absolutely.
And that way,
nobody
even has to interpret it. It'll be right in the front.
Michael, you had something? And then we'll go back to you, Brendan.
As I recall, a lot, because we adjusted the MTs when we brought them up, the MOs, a lot of wells are so close to the MT, but I don't know the percentage. This looks like there's several hydrographs we need to relook at just because of that alone.
I agree. That is for, yeah, we got some MO work, and then we have a set of most NMTs for the other RMPs. Right, okay.
And we're being asked to agree to a concept.
That's, yeah, so
just a concept.
Without knowing what the trigger is going to look like.
Yeah, but problematic.
But you set the trigger. You set the trigger.
But yeah.
Then the commission group, as I understand, is who sets the group.
I think my.
So why do we even venture be too scary?
Different.
My concern in agreeing to this framework being tied to the MO, you're saying that the local control, that there is local control around the MO?
There is, yeah.
Up until the point you submit it to the state, right? So it's we can ask for an MO and then they can define it. That's I don't. My point is that I don't know how we solve that
dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
That dynamic. Yes,
but we're setting up a framework that at the moment. We can agree with what you're saying potentially, which is that conceptually don't be too concerned because you're really unlikely to ever get to the MO
without some really significant issues.
Right, like you have to have a really huge overdraft or a really significant draft conditions to get you to 20% below the MO.
Based on what you choose to put the MOs at. When we do it, right? We get to make that call.
I know, yeah. The problem. So the way I describe that is you're agreeing to the goalposts.
Mm-hmm.
Goalposts being the MO.
Yeah.
In this framework. And I have concerns that the goalposts get moved in the future.
I
know.
By the way, I have over 600 meters.
Control of.
Right, yeah.
We say local control. I've just seen this before.
I know exactly what you mean. I don't know how to fix that problem. I wish I could give you. I just don't even know how to resolve that kind of an issue.
You know,
or the political one, like Hal saying, I don't freaking know how to resolve that issue. That's the problem. Is that
I think that no matter what. So what I'm saying, being aware of that and having sufficient flexibility built into the program, understanding the goalposts might get moved.
That's what we're going to talk about flexibility too.
Okay.
There's a slide for this too.
But certainly not. We've captured that the want to explain the 10-year rolling average, how that calculation is all incorporated, that certain MOs need work. So I'm going to push us to anything else on command management action two to explain. We talked a bit about it already, but want to revisit.
I think that's everything that is of any importance in one. So now we're moving to two.
Yes, so this one's action
two. Away from fees, so there's been any discussion about what that fee
is.
That's it. Just take the half acre and put it. What is that?
Purpose? Obviously, that's going to get voted through a public process, but right now, those numbers are kind of looking like around $100 an acre. But what I'm seeing right now. Like, no guarantees, like I said, this has to get passed by
people.
This gets passed by a public process, actually. Yes.
All right.
By the way, this gets processed by the Board of Supervisors, too. So, every single thing that we do.
All right, Justin, management action two.
All right. Sorry. So, this is what we're going to call the safety net, right? Management action two is the pay. This is all fine and good. We want to raise funds to fix actions. We want to associate those funds to fix those actions with the polygons that are having the worst problems. Action two is there's a bottom to this. So if you are below the MT for multiple seasons in a row, right, then that triggers the second effect, which is where sustainable yield comes into play. And remember, sustainable yield is the average of all of the safe yields within your grouping of polygons. Sustainable yield, average of all of them. So it's a buffer across there too. So one polygon doesn't necessarily trigger it. It has to be multiple years and the average over multiple polygons. So this is what is directly written into the Sigma regulation, and it says,
didn't think that's not necessarily a rule of thumb for.
It is written directly in the water code.
It's
in Sigma law.
So
it says $500 per acre foot charge for pumping above the sustainable.
You know, I'm assuming that I have to say this now, and that's why I need really good code. Because to me, this was simply a penalty if your subbasin was in probation.
It's not.
It's not.
Had not tied to probation in any way.
Okay.
So, yes, the state does say, hey, if you're in probation, we're going to charge you this. Right? The water board does say that, but that's not what we're talking about. That is part of the actual regulation built into it. And yes, on the 27th, I will show you that code.
Thank you.
How about a board?
I can share it with you by email. Totally agree. Email code.
Thanks.
Conceptually, any other questions on just the safety net?
We need to figure out what the desired results or point me to where those might be.
They're written in all of the FBs, and I can send you those too. So there are things like a certain number of dry wells within the polygon, a certain number of years duration of dramatically falling water levels. There's like some salinity based stuff in there, but we've never gotten anywhere near that. There's some science in there.
So those are all measurable. The one that's not is the effect on GDEs that could come in the way.
We don't even know
when anybody just claims it to be.
We don't even know what that is yet.
An environmental group can say the trees are dying here and that's why. Because that's an undesirable effect. Yeah, that's called.
Yeah, it is not currently that way. And I mean, you heard me say this out loud. We should all be worried about the way GDEs get interacted. Hopefully, what we do here lies when we put it together eventually, right? And we have control of how it's going to work. But that's something we really need to keep an eye on because it has a potential nature of that. Just like you said, there can be input from outside groups that make the state be very, very liberal on this, right?
Yeah.
And that could be problematic. But I don't even know. But once again, I don't know how to resolve that issue. That's going to be something we're going to have to, I don't know, figure out when it comes.
Any other questions on management action two? We're almost on the home stretch, people. All right. So we talked a lot about updates, data. Data and information updates. We talked about a lot of actual those kinds of updates, but now this.
Okay.
I'm just done. It's fine. Go ahead.
All right. So, continuous improvement. So this is what I've been sort of pounding the entire time, is that this idea that built into this system is mandated recalculation and automated recalculation, so it does not have to go in front of a body to make the change. Because we all know that can be problematic, right? So what we're saying here is things like the groundwater level measurements, how many acres are irrigated within the polygon, and the pumping volumetrics, as they change over time, automatically create a change in those safety yield calculations. And not only that, they're put into the site, a 5-year cycle of mandatory updates, and B, a 10-year cycle of averages. Right, so you're buffering all these things out, and you're creating this mandatory review within the program. So what we know, right, and what we talk about in here all the time is we're going to have to take a step, right? We know that there are things that we want to get better data on, and there's things that we prefer there to be way more clarity. However, the only thing that we can do right now is say, hey, we want that, and build into the program that automatically happen. But it would both. That's the goal of this, is to make that complete, no decision made. It actually just happens within the program.
Good question. So is so there's an annual component and then there's a 5-year cycle. Is the 5-year cycle based on a 5-year rolling average?
10-year rolling average.
10-year rolling average. So will there be opportunity for updates based on, and I mean, if the We'll start coming off the bus for a 2 or 3 year period. Will it impact this 5 year cycle review or not? I mean, if we get into a situation where things really start to come apart,
then that's
so we have to wait 5 years.
Well, that's I'm building in the automatic 5 years, but that doesn't mean we can't all go in front of a political body and say, "Hey, we need to change this or something."
Or we're in a better case scenario, if things really start to get better because we've done some things that make a difference.
But much less. I'm not with you. I agree.
Is there written in there a there may be an appeal within the 5 year period? Yeah.
I don't. Even if writing that in there would actually make zero difference. Just to be very clear, stating that an appeal would happen, you know, write it in there. I don't care. There can be an appeal on anything. I'll even write that in there. Anything can be appealed directly to the political body. I'll write that in the document, right? And I think that's great. I think those are all good. It's the same process regardless of whether it says it in there or doesn't say it in there. What happens is you bring something forward to the body and say, look, there's a problem. Here it is. Can you help us fix it?
This isn't statute.
Or allow us to fix it.
We're not writing this some sort of statute where
this what we're writing right now is the plan. The statute has to go in within 180 days. 6 months after the plan goes in, there will be two statutes created. One for set one, one for set two. The set two is the statute that states if you pump more than the sustainable yield is $500 per acre foot. One is if you hit these triggers on these MOs by percentage, then these are the fees set. And by the way, we will also have all of the fees being done at the same time. So you'll know total exposure monetarily by the time we pass that in that 6 month period. Which I try to set that up so they run at the same time. No.
I want to talk a little bit, or we can flesh out this idea of appeals. What exactly are you appealing? What do you want to appeal? What do you see down the road that's going to happen?
What I think Steve just indicated was that you're saying that we have continuous improvement. It happens every 5 years.
We count about three because she's up the rear now and can we take over?
Correct.
That's what you're basically asking.
That's what I was referencing to say. Something really strange happened, positive or negative, within the 5 year cycle, we appeal to the governing body here to move outside the framework that's been built and give us use this data now versus waiting for 3 more years from today to use the data.
You're assuming you're going to get a response in a reasonable time. And does it have to go to the state level at that point also, which is going to take longer?
I'm on your side. I'm just telling
yes,
you.
Yes, I understand.
You and I would make figure out how to resolve something, right?
According to the current conditions.
The one that comes to mind for me is the in-loop. If people start stepping up and using that surface water, that's going to change all of our calculations.
Real quick.
Facts.
Yeah. Like that year. Oh, my comment was just that you can make the appeal that it's dependent on getting a response in a reasonable time.
So are you talking about recalculating for a specific area? Or recalculating,
I don't know,
the entire sun base.
No, I don't know. It's too theoretical, right? It's just that I think Justin said you can put it in the document or not, the result will be the same. You can always go to the board supervisors and say, hey, there's some extraordinary thing happening according to the whatever it is, like if it was a general plan type of thing, the general plan has a time frame also. So you can always go appeal to the board of supervisors to have a carve out from a plan within a
because of an issue.
Because of a local condition, right?
And something like Steve said, maybe you think of this. Let's just say the RMS in your area dropped 50 feet and yours went up 3 feet. Right? You might say, hey, wait a minute here, we got some weird things going on. Can we recalculate based on this issue or take a look at this and bring that forward? I think that's a very viable scenario, and I see where something like that could potentially happen, maybe.
But the reality is, as Hal said, getting the local supervisor or the local government agencies to react in an appropriate period of time is
both
a challenge.
Both are working often.
So the work plan should have an appeal process.
Yeah, and I'll just say all aspects of plan can be the most like that.
All right, so we'll flag it that, like, generally it sounds like this group wants to have some sort of appeal process and some sort of written down somewhere, even though if it is following the regular mechanisms, I think this group wants to at least write down a bit of what that might look like in hopes that it will be moving to a bit more streamlined. Everything's hopeful. All right.
More flexibility bits.
So this whole list is actually a lot of things that we already talked about. But if there's anything on this list that you want, the more new stuff is on. Yes, there's a whole slide for it.
Another problem with the 2020 or 2031 implementation of punitive charges. So we haven't talked about the fact that the recharge projects, you've got the reason 2042 deadline was put in was to allow, takes a long time to get these up and running. At that point, you won't even have achieved much of, probably any of the benefit on the recharge projects, because all they're allowing is for a temporary water right that's yet to be converted into a permanent water right. And the pilot, the argument I made last time, it's the pilot projects are going to have very little recharge because you're only going to pump 2 days a year into them. So by the time that gets converted out, before you've had an opportunity to get these recharge projects to be functional, you're going to be in the punitive phase. So it's another reason why I think it needs to be shut back. And also, by then, I'm not so sure you're going to have defensible data that doesn't just open a can of worms for lawsuits, just because we've identified already all kinds of data problems that are going to take time to put together.
So my basic response to that is the same one I've had many, many times. There's times I say, there is no such thing as perfect data, and we put money in our budgets to defend against lawsuits for a reason. I'm going to tell you that this is going to go to an attorney, an independent attorney that we have hired for special counsel, that will review this and will give us back the feedback on the risks associated with that. And that's important, right?
And I think on something like that, we need the opportunity to vet that with them as well, to ask the same questions or to make our points.
Well, all of the commentary, also the commentary with it.
Okay.
Straight up to them. I will send your guys' email commentary right to them. Yeah, it's all the. It's because I want them to know where we are and what things are happening and what the work is so that they can review it properly. I think that's important.
One of the things that I'm starting to go ahead.
One thing I always get concerned about is, what is the legality of? Do we need to know that? What's the attorney's going to do?
They'll give us that review too. Polygons included.
As it presented, Brenda, there's no definition of what the boundaries are.
Yes, it's a mathematical equation.
Yeah,
right.
And
always going to be.
When you're starting, it says fees on a baseball plane. There's got to be some boundaries.
It's going to get, it'll get put directly into our mapping system, and it's automated. It shows it exactly where it is as it crosses the property boundaries. We already have, it actually exists already. It's in your data viewer already. Those locations already exist. We can see them in place already when lost across, and it is the mathematical calculation of where they are. It exists right now.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and everybody, you guys all have access to that. You can see that right now.
I think, say, you know, just follow up on how said, I really am anxious to see this recharge feasibility study. And, pardon me?
Yeah, agree.
And I think that'll help us a lot as far as, you know, what the future looks like. I also, and this is aside, this is dealing with, well, maybe it is. You know, I think we really need to look at in the recharge and those possibilities, and maybe develop, and I haven't thought this through, but we need a program that just focuses on in the recharge potential. And looking at each of these irrigation districts, seeing what the infrastructure issues are, seeing what the, I guess this is such, what's the potential here? I mean, we have these numbers on paper, but I don't know that we've.
You're actually going to get some of that out of the grant.
Yeah, I don't know if we've flushed this stuff out yet. I think
we're going to get some of that out of the grant, though. That there's a specific consultant that's a sub consultant to LSCE. That has actually been communicating with them. And correct me if I'm wrong, Eddie, if you're still there, but you are. We should get some amount of that input that you're looking for as an output from that. And that you're right, that is incredibly important. I mean, I already know that there are tons of water districts that pump essentially nothing but have a significant right. And getting that water out of the system into the irrigation is important.
Eddie, really fast, and then we're going to keep on moving forward.
Yeah, no, just confirming what Justin said. Yes, we're working on it, and it's going to sort of look at each water district to make sure that they're maximizing their usage of surface water. If not, why, and how do we incentivize that? So that is being worked on. So,
yeah, and just to reiterate thing for when you talk about flexibility, every single thing we do that affects groundwater levels automatically is recalculated within that 5-year period because it's based on groundwater levels. So if we put something in place that is a recharge project that positively affects the groundwater level, it goes into the map directly. Nobody needs to say it should.
I got something for Eddie. Eddie, this is Michael Orr, just a general question. Given that, you know, we've got this opportunity towards the end of August to begin to make recommendations or present other ideas, is there any way we can see early drafts of this, especially the recharge and ending efforts. So we just have that information before we start going down that road.
Yeah, I mean, let me just confirm when it's. I mean, it's forthcoming. I just need to check on when it's going to be available, at least for an internal review. So yeah,
August 27th is that meeting date. I'm wondering if you can
let me
help
check.
Us out.
Yeah, let me check and see if we can make that date, at least for an internal review and overview. Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Are you thinking it will help with the possibility of understanding whether or not this happens or doesn't happen as we move forward?
Yeah, you know, I understand it just happens. You know, I'm not. I just really want the perspective of where we work.
Hope it doesn't.
All right.
I mean, just be honest.
We're super tight on time. So anything on this slide, Justin, that you want to point out? I know there is some of... You know, folks are sharing various ideas that are running at different levels of complexity, different timelines.
So one thing that I want to point out is I hear everybody's comments about, hey, how could we put something in place that allows us to trade water more freely? How could a program like that look? I'm absolutely willing to work to generate a program like that. But I think it should be independent of this program. And the reason why that is because we are going to be weighing things like the administrative cost of what that takes to do versus its potential positive, right? Versus the potential outcome. There's a lot of sort of big things that need to happen there. And I think that it can be done as a program that's entirely independent of demand management in itself.
I'd like to see it in the work plan, though. I think it should be
done. You're all going to see some of that in the work plan. Yeah, I know that they are working on that. So, and it also gives us the ability to sort of see it on a global scale, how it affects things individually and sort of how it makes differences. And it can be its own program and administered separately from this on its own. Right? It's a big data lift there.
If we're talking about your straw proposal, I think that some of the stuff I want to see in there is the whole non-contiguous partial management, lease issues, you know.
Yeah, we agree. And that's on your list. That's on the list.
No, I see it on that list. Future policies and adjustments. That's kind of hand-waving. You know, if you're going to come out with, hey, this is a straw proposal, there needs to be something in there.
Well, there is something in there right now. And that is that there's
just put
that in your
basically don't do it.
Yeah. And that is what is manageable by what we have right now. So if we want to create a program that's beyond that, we should also very realistically talk about what that costs and how that works. And that is definitely not going to happen by January 1st of next year.
I think
so if you want a water rating program, let's do that.
Well, I'm not okay with set water trading aside. Start some of these subjects like non-contiguous partial management or the whole lease thing.
Wait a minute, and also all you're asking is that the concept is addressed in the proposal. We don't need to get down to the weeds on how it's going to be there. It's a potential.
Oh, I'll write in there that we will work over the next 5 years on a water grading program if you guys are interested in that.
Well, it's
that what you want? I don't have that.
At an absolute minute.
That's what I was getting at.
Reading your...
Brendan, action item. If you have any comments, please submit those in writing.
We'll do. I'm sorry, I booked something up against 10:30.
We get it,
sir.
Okay.
I will make a note of that in there. Yeah, we're 100% back and going to program, and I'm totally done.
I would request that it has to be. I mean, I know we have a group decision, but I'm not.
No, no.
That's the outline.
For the last 3 meetings we've been talking
about. I've heard multiple people say
well, that. Actually, it's been discussed, not in the kind of detail.
Right.
In the meetings.
Yeah, that's why I'm
we're only not again. Again. We're only not out of time.
Speaking of which, we are. We are 1 minute over. So this timeline, I think you want to speak. This is the adoption and implementation timeline at a very high level. Anything to speak to this one? I think we alluded to a lot of these milestones already. But what I want to bring up is a bit of like what's happening in the next like month or so. So again, the goal was get a draft program to the commission. That's September 10th. That means very small amount of time to try and like refine as much as possible as the recommendations that are going to come out of this group slash the ad. So the goal is at our next meeting, which for this group is August 27th, is to have that get as refined as possible so that way it can go to the commission. And you're trying to be supportive here. So CBI is scoped out to help with some of this write-up. So being able to identify what were the issues that were of concern that this group talked about, what are the recommendations, getting that outlined, and then what are also the other ideas. So that way making sure that the commission and the board are aware of the various things that might make the group just didn't have time to really, really flesh out. So Justin, anything you want to add to
that? Okay, that's great. Just to reiterate, your guys' commentary that comes from here about this is going to be presented at the commission. Not necessarily, hey, you said this, but generally, here are the comments that were made and in response to these. And here are the, you know, recommendations from individuals. Not a consensus-based recommendation, just these are some of the recommendations that were made into this program so that everybody has a chance to listen to that as well. The people that are making the decisions.
Barry? So long as they're submitted in writing. Here.
Yeah, she's
so a lot easier that way.
She's gonna you're recording it. You got it.
Yeah, the recording is all available. It's just
and it's not gonna get there unless you write it.
She's gonna compile it for us all, and
that's what I've seen happening.
That's a benefit.
So it's the best like tracking at the high level, but if we want to confirm that maybe we have the details accurate, it's very much better to submit it in writing.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just going to say this process is overly rushed. And I think that some of the, you know, no presentation materials and all this other stuff, that's problematic. And, you know, we're in a situation where if you want buy-off, there's got to be a better relationship there. It's kind of late now, but need to see stuff ahead of time in writing, and not 4 o'clock on the night before.
Right.
So
I guess I get the time constraint.
And as a groundwater commissioner, I'm going to be struggling at this point. My vision is I'm going to be struggling to support what comes out of here because of some of the challenges there, just so you know.
Okay. Well, there it is.
Yep, understood.
Justin, we're on a tight timeline. Do you think that there can or should be in between, like a webinar call or something like that for this group? Because I know we're trying to deal with a tight timeline. Whatever recommendations come out of the August 27th meeting, that is what it is.
We can't
small
do anything. No,
I mean, if it's a small number, that's fine.
Well, we can't do anything to Ian's point until we have the documentation that we're supposed to be reviewing. So to have another meeting, I think we've made our points. That don't let me speak for you, but you need to see something in writing to be able to review it before you can have that.
Right. That would be the case of like if there was that situation.
So ultimately, and I'm just going to say this out loud, what is happening in here is a process review of the things that we are going to do. What's going to happen in front of the entire body is the review of the entire program documentation together and a recommendation out of the entire body that entire process go to the board. and everybody is going to get their own piece of input during that time. We are going to take all of the compiled responses and data and present them at the same time, and that is going to have its own discussion period, including the recommendations from legal, right? So it's not necessarily that out of this group comes a fully vetted plan that exists in its entirety. That takes a significant bureaucratic lift, and that is not going to happen necessarily by the 27th. So I just want to make that really clear to everybody. If someone is expecting to see the entirety of a program entirely written on the 27th with everything in it and all of the comeback and all of the associated bits, you are not going to see that.
But we'll see.
That's going to go.
The revised draft proposal with the concerns that were brought up will be.
Well, it'll only be revised with those consensus items that we talked about. I will be revising those with those consensus
items. But the memo that CPI is going to work on is going to try and capture the concerns. So that's,
and all
that's,
of the other ones will be in writing on the side.
All right. So I know like Steve's about ready to bolt out the door. And so we are 7 minutes over. So thanks, folks, for staying on longer. I'm going to close things out. And again, the next meeting for this group is on the 27th. Thanks very much.